So, Bosa, what I have for you tonight, this is going to be a little bit of a change of pace and a review of a lot of what we've done, is a shiur that Rav Soloveitchik, my Rebbe, gave many, many years ago that was written up in a sefer called Rishimas Shiurim. The reason I didn't find it is because it's on Shavuos. But this is a book that was published by Rabbi Heshi Reichman based on the notes. And as I said, I think it would be a nice review. And if you don't mind, Rishuschem, we'll go through it. He starts with the Tosfos in Sanhedrin Samachei Amud Beis. That's what's relevant to for our purposes, which you'll see on the left side, bottom of your page. Tosfos says that in the sugya there, the Gemara is comparing Edim Zomimim to what's called chasima b'kol. Chasima b'kol means that instead of muzzling the animal and violating the law of lo sachsam shor b'disho by working with the animal, and that would be considered like a maisa, instead, he didn't muzzle the animal, but every time the animal went near food, he would call it and force it to move on. That's called chasima b'kol. And the Gemara says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, There's room to equate the case of Edom Zomimim with the case of Chasima B'kol because of the principle called B'dibur Ka'ovid Maisa, which means that sometimes as a result of speech, an action is done. And normally our principle is that on a Lav Shem Bo Maisa, you don't get Malkus. But in the case of B'dibur Ka'ovid Maisa, for example, if he forces the animal to stop eating by yelling at the animal, whatever he does, that's called chasim b'kol. Or in the case of Edom Zomimim, where they violate the law of losana b'reachei tshaka just verbally, with an oral pronouncement, but as a result it was a gemar din, so the gemara wants to say that that's called b'dibur kovid maisa. And the gemara at the end rejects this analogy and says there's a difference between Edom Zomimim on the one hand and chasim b'kol on the other hand. And the language of the gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Samachei Amud Beis is very obscure. The Gemara says, "Shani Edim Zomimim Hoil V'Yeshnan Biriyo," which literally means that Edim Zomim is different, and it would not qualify as B'diburo Ka'ovid Maisa because Yeshno Biriyo, something about sight. So Rashi explains, "Ikar Chiyuva." The thrust of the chiyuv of Edom Zomimim ba'al yidei hara'iya is a result of what they saw, or at least what they claim they saw, but we don't believe that they saw. Shemeidim shera'u ura'iya les be'mais. Rashi says that even if I hold that you get malchus for violating a law, if you violate the law in a situation that can be described as b'dibura ka'avid maisa, that would not explain and justify Malkus in the case of Edom Zomimim, because Mal Edom Zomim Shekein Yeshno Re'iyah, Rashi says the Ikar violation is based on the fact that they claim they saw something.
But it's B'dibur, it's not Re'iyah.
Right, there is an element of B'dibur. But it's not the same as B'dibur HaKavid Maisa, because really the root of it goes back to Re'iyah, or in the case of Edom Zomimim, the fact that they falsify and claim that they saw something.
Isn't there a separate law about lying in court of some sort?
Oh, so that's the law of losana b'reachei tshaka. And the question is, does that law incur malchus? Normally we would say you wouldn't get malchus for such a law. And the reason for that is because it's a law shein bo maisa. It's only dibur. The Gemara thought to say that perhaps it's b'dibur ka'avid maisa, and that upgrades the dibur to the level of maisa. And now the Gemara is saying, is if I introduce re'iyah as a key element, then once again we go back to our original premise, it's a law shein bo maisa. It doesn't even qualify for that middle case.
Maisa, where's that? By lying, there's an act.
Right, but the Gemara holds that dibur is not a maisa. A maisa has to be a physical action, not dibur.
No, but there'd be a consequence for that.
Oh, so the consequence is called b'dibur ka'avid maisa, right? That's called, as a result of his violation of the law, something happened, something changed in the world, right? The animal was muzzled, was prevented from eating, and what caused the animal to be inhibited? It was his kol, So that's called bidibura kavod mice, like you say, the repercussions of his mice. The Gemara wanted to say, let's suggest the same thing should apply in the case of Edom Zomimim, and the Gemara rejects that analogy by saying that Edom Zomimim is not bidibur kavod maisa. Why? Because it's shiny Edom Zomimim, okay, so because of what? Yehoil the Yeshnan Biri'iya. That's the Gemara in Sanhedrin.
We have a Gezeres HaKasa, right? I mean, that's the bottom line.
Really. Oh, so why do you get Malkus? If we're holding that A, you don't get Malkus for Lav Shem Bo Maisa. B, with the only exceptions that the Dibura Kavod Maisa. But C, Edom Zomim is not qualified as, does not qualify as the Dibura Kavod Maisa. So then D, we're back to our original question, why then do you get Malkus for Edom Zomim? And here's where the Rav quotes a Zayda Reb Chaim. That's in the second paragraph, you'll see towards the bottom left on page Kuf Pei Hei. He says, Ubir HaGrach Zatzal. And the Grach, Reb Chaim, is basing himself largely on the Rambam, but there are other Rishonim apparently who accept this Rambam, that the Gemara is going to establish that the reason why Edom Zomimim are punished is not the violation of Losan of Reacha Eid Shoker. The Averis HaLav, which normally under every single other Lav in the Torah engenders a Chiyuv Onshim, the Onshim is because, right, we always say that you need an Azhara and you violate the Azhara in the Torah, the Lav in the Torah, then you get Malkus, you get Misa, the punishment that's appropriate. In the case of Edom Zomim, it's impossible to say that the punishment is a result of violating the Lav, because the Lav remains a Lav Shem Bo Maisa at the end of the day, and Lav Shem Bo Maisa Lokin Alav. But rather, Ella, and here's the punchline if you want to underline this, Ella, the reason why you get Malkus or whatever punishment the Edom get, is called Chalus Shem Shel Eid Zomim Begavra. Okay, so we're going to underline that phrase. That's a very abstract, shall we call it, typical Reb Chaim kind of definition. So what Reb Chaim is establishing is that there's something in the Gavra of the Eid that's called a Chal Shem Eid Zomim. We have to see what's, you know, what does that encompass, that Chal Shem. You know, what are the implications of that Chal Shem? But this status of the Eid as an Eid Zomim first and foremost engenders punishment. Whereas punishment would normally be understood as being engendered by the violation of the Lav Lo San, and Reb Chaim says you cannot maintain that position because the Lav is a Lav Shem Bo Maisa. It doesn't qualify to be Mechayiv Malkus. The Chiv Malkus, or Misa in other cases, is only a result of the Chal Shem Eid Begafer. Now all this sounds very abstract, but hopefully by the time we finish this introduction and we flesh it out, it'll have more meaning to us. And we're taking an excursion into the world of Brisk. He says the following: Ein Edom Zomimim ne'enoshim. Edom Zomim are not punished kishar ovrei lavim shabbat Torah in the same way or through the same mechanics that apply to other people who violate the lav. For example, if somebody eats a kezayis of basar tameh, so the Torah says, "Thou shalt not eat lo tochlu kol neveh lo sochlu." You violated the lav. For the violation of the lav, you get malchus. He says in other cases, like for example the one we just gave, the Avera itself is a Maisa which transgresses a Lav, and as a result of a Maisa, which is a transgression of a Lav, you get Malkus. Not so in the case of Edom Zomim. You cannot maintain that position because the Avera itself, in and of itself, could not generate Malkus because that Avera is a Lav Shem Bo Maisa. But rather, as a result of their Edus, we clamp down on the Edim a new status, a halachic legal status, which is called Edom Zomim. And as a result of that new status, they get punishment. The punishment is not inherent in the Maisa Avera, because there is no Maisa Avera. But rather, the punishment is inherent in this new status that we superimpose on the Edom. You know, they wear a dunce hat, a dunce cap that says, we are Edom Zomim. And all the dinim, including the onshim, that apply to Edom Zomim, result from this new status that the aid has been, you know, hichtarnu oto, you know, we crowned him with the crown of Eid Zomim, and that's why all the deedim of cloth.
It fits in with the concept of an eitzulim being a chiddush. The whole thing's a chiddush.
Exactly. Excellent. Beautiful point. The whole thing is a chiddush. It's only... We have no reason to believe the second pair of Edom against the first pair of Edom. It's really treyu trey. Who says that the first pair of Edom and the Zomim were lying in the second? But the answer is that Torah says that this is a mechanics through which, with all the specifics of Edom Zomim, they say Manu Ayisim and all the different Dinim, we attach a Shem Eid Zomim to the first pair of Edom, each one, and that is going to engender all the Dinim of HaZom. Let's see how Rav Chaim develops this idea.
From the mikvah to even say that you can attach something, where's the shorish?
So let's go through the various sources that Rav Chaim quotes, and perhaps we can come back to answer your question. His first source is the Mishnah in Makkos. You remember this Mishnah at the end of the first parak of Makkos? We learned it not that long ago. And Rabbi Akiva says that why does the Torah say Al Pishnayim O Shlosha Edim? Why the third aid? Is the third aid is not, according to Rabbi Akiva, simply to teach us that Nimtza Echad Mehem Karav Apostle, we throw out the entire cut, but rather Lahachmir Olav, that even though he was the third aid, and we didn't really need him at all, he was totally superfluous, nevertheless, Lasos Dino Kayotze Bielu, that he is treated in the same way that the first two Edom are treated. Now, presumably, when do you punish the third witness like you do the first two? Only if what? It was Hazama against the third Edom as well, correct? Says the Nebuki Yosef, in the name of the Re Ben Geos, Diyim Huzmu Hashnayim, what does that mean? Only the first two were subject to Hazom Imanu Yisem. Afal Pishalo Huzam Hashlishi. Rabosai, do you see this? There was no Hazom against the third one. Nasu Kulam Zomimim. Rabosai, this is a Rishon. If I would tell you this, you'd throw me out. You'd say, Berzon, you went off the Lokomoko, you're off the deep end. The Onesh HaKosav HaShlishi, the Torah is saying, Oshnayim Oshlosha, meaning the third one will suffer the same identical punishment as the first two. Shenitfal Oshnayim, who added himself, he attached himself to the first two. Sheavru V'idu Sheker, says the Rav, the obvious question. L'chora Yipole, it's a Pele. Halo HaShlishi Lo Oval Al HaVeira Shal Edu Sheker. He didn't violate the law of Losan Abrecha Yitzchaker. We have no reason to believe so. He may have indeed been at the place. Because even the Mazimim, the second Rebbe, they don't know whether or not he, the third aid, was there to see it. They just know that the first two Edom couldn't have been at that place at that time because they were with us elsewhere. They're not denying that Reuven killed Shimon. They're not even denying that the third aid was there to witness the crime. So we have no reason in a million years to believe that the third aid perjured himself and violated Losana. Why are we punishing him according to the Re Ben Gavis? Vitzarech Lomer says, Reb Chaim, the only way of getting out of this riddle, Shetaimo, the reason that underlies the Re Ben Gavis, meaning what this pasuk is teaching me according to Rabbi Kiva about the third aid, what's the mechanics of it? Mikevan Shashlishi, it's Taref Lekat HaZomim, since he decided to attach himself.
To prevent people from Stam taking a ride on the other two.
Well, I don't know what you mean by stop taking a ride, you know, but in any of...
He figures that he'll join, but he doesn't have to suffer the same consequences. Right.
But again, did he perjure himself? Is he lying? We don't know that he's lying. His avera is nothing more than the fact that he linked himself up with two other guys who turn out to be Zomimim. Is therefore chalbo, if you could underline these words, chalbo shem eid Zomim. That's how the Torah defines someone who has the status, right? He's blacklisted, if you want to call him, as an Eid Zomim. And therefore, when the Hazoma happens to the Kat, in this case there was Hazomim Manu Yisim against two out of the three of the Kat, then the entire Kat becomes a Kat of Eidim Zomimim. And the status of Eid Zomim applies to each one of the members of the Kat, including the third member who was not subject to Imanu Ayisem. And therefore he's chayev, the third aid, likewise is subjected to the same punishment as the first two witnesses by virtue of the chal shem eid zomim. But you cannot postulate his punishment, define it and categorize it as a punishment that's incurred by the violation of the law. Again, Rabbi, so we're seeing something very revolutionary here. Every single punishment in the Torah is a result of a violation of the law, with one exception, and that's Eid Zomim. What you do is you magically become an Eid Zomim. When I say magically, I mean through the mechanics that the Torah stipulates. And when that happens, you're an Eid Zomim, you're caught in the trap, you're going to suffer all the consequences. It's not an onus for the violation of the law.
Is he part of the cut by saying he... Okay, the other Eidim are saying they weren't there, they were somewhere else. Is he saying they were there? I saw them from an angle, or
that's a good question. I don't, for that, we'd have to go back to the sugya of, you remember Tolkidei Dibur? You remember that sugya that we did at Tolkidei Dibur on the Vav? So the question is:
we're considering part of the cut of the other two guys who are Eidim Zomim because another pair of witnesses came. How did he become part of that cut? Was he?
Oh, because he testified Tolkidei Dibur the third eight. And that in itself sort of implicates him as being as sort of supporting the first two eight. But again, you cannot say that he violated the law of Lo Sanav Re'achid Shakar. You can hold him guilty and tar and feather him for linking himself up with two Eidim who turned out to be Eidim Zomimim. Did he know that they were Eidim Zomimim? Maybe yes, but nevertheless, he didn't perjure himself. Okay, Rabos, again, I want to go through all
the actual act that occurred.
He told the truth.
And he told the truth.
As far as we know, he told the truth.
This is only a sheet of
correct. Well, again, what I want you to hold your breath here is, again, this is a Shia, I'm telling you, that's off the charts. I wouldn't have, injected it into Hollywood. It's unbelievable how many different proofs Reb Chaim is going to adduce to this conclusion, this revolution, this redefinition of why an Eid Zomim is Chayev. It's not for the Aveira of Losana. That's Reb Chaim's breakthrough. Let's see a second proof. The Gemara Bava Kama Daf Ayin Beis, this is what you were referring to, Rabbi Sachnutz, earlier. There's a machlokus between Abai v'Rava. Abai says that Eid Zomim l'mafreyahu nifsal, which means that from the time that he gave his testimony, he has not yet been established as an Eid Zomim. The Zomim process did not take place. But let's say on the first of the month, he gave his testimony. 2 weeks later, he became an Eid Zomim. So Abai says that he's an Eid Zomim l'mafreya retroactive from the time that he delivered his testimony. Therefore, all testimonies that he gave subsequent, beyond that date, are all completely null and void. They have to be disqualified. V'rava Omar, mikan ulahaba unifsa. He's only possible from the moment that he became an Eid Zomim. That means all the testimony that he delivered for the previous 2 weeks, subsequent to his original Eidus on which he became Eid Zomim, they're all kosher. Why? Says Rava, because Eid Zomim is a chidushu. We don't understand the mechanics of Eid Zomim. We have no reason to believe with any element of certainty, based on our logic, that he indeed had perjured himself, this Eid Zomim. Treyu treyninu. My chaz is the tzayis lahani, tzayis lahani. Why do you believe the second pair of Eidim? Why don't you believe, the first pair of Eidim? Hilkach, therefore, says Rava, and this is a principle that appears all over Shas, Ein lecha bo ela mishas chidushov v'eluch, that whenever the Torah gives you a chiddush, we only implement, activate that chiddush and apply it from the moment, the last moment possible. Here, from the moment that he became an Eid Zomim. So the Rav says we should be asking the following question. Okay, we don't understand why the Torah believes the second pair of Eidim, according to Rav. It's a chidush. But the bottom line is, we believe the second pair of Eidim. Otherwise, the whole parasha of Eidim Zomim is completely meaningless. Therefore, me'achar she'ed mino ha'Torah l'mazimim huvar l'mafreya sheni zonim ha'idu sheker v'lomo lo yiposlu l'mafreya mishas ha'aver k'shitas abayim. Says Reb Chaim, because the law of Eidu Shek, which they violated at the moment that they testified 2 weeks ago, on the first of the month, Eino Mechayev Esa Eidim Be'onshin. That doesn't activate kasher v'asisim lo kasher zomim the punishment, but rather chal shame shall aid zomim, but gavra he amechayeves. At what point is the gavra enthroned, you know, is crowned with the keter of this new chal shame aid zomim? Only from today, 2 weeks later, when the two Eidim, the second pair of Eidim, came in and they said, Imanu Hayisim. And Bezdin interrogated the second pair of Eidim, and based on a very good, solid interrogation, they issued a verdict that's called the Gemar Din, that the first two Eidim are Eidim Zomim. Therefore, Nifsal Rak Mikan Ulahava Velolim Afreya. The only problem with this approach is that what are you going to do with Abaye? And this is one of the Al-Kigam. So Reb Chaim was waiting for that question, and he said the following: La Abaye Chal Hashem Shal Eid Zomim L'Mafreya. Abaye says against Rava that the Chal Hashem Eid Zomim is Chal L'Mafreya Mishas Hagodas Eid Dusam. In other words, the process of Azoma was 2 weeks down the line, but the Chal Hashem Eid Zomim is retroactive from the moment that they testified, because since their testimony is what incurred the Chal Hashem Eid Zomim, it makes sense the Chal Hashem Eid Zomim should be attached, Yesh Ladbik Oto, you know, together with that moment of the Eidus itself, but not for the violation of Losana, but rather as far as the Chal Hashem Eid Zomim. The machlokis then between Abai v'Rava is at what moment in time, al pi din, is the Chal Hashem Eid Zomim Chal. According to Rav, it's only Chal Mikan Olahava from the moment of the Azoma, and according to Abai, the Chal Hashem Eid Zomim is Chal Limafreya. Let's go on, Rav Osai. The Rambam paskins in Perek Chof Milchus Eidus, the Ein Li Eidim Zomimim Shgaga, Lefisha Ein Ba Maisa, Lefichach ein tzrichim hasra kemosha v'yar. Says the Rama, for every single violation of the Torah, in order to get punished for it, you need a hasra. Otherwise, maybe he was a shogeg. The only exception is Eid Zomim. An Eid Zomim doesn't need a warning, doesn't need hasra. And the reason is because Ein Lein Zomim
Shgog. How can you warn him if you didn't know he did anything, until he said something?
No, but we could have warned him on a condition and say that if you're perjuring yourself...
Don't they do that? Don't they? I mean, like in secular courts anyway, like maybe they do it in Jewish courts, I don't know. You know, you put your hand on the Bible and you say, I swear I say the whole truth, none but the truth. You know,
right.
They warn you. They give you a warning.
Right. So the Ravid says, Zeatam lo yadati. Mahu. I don't know what he's talking about. The Rambam makes no sense. In Cain, according to the Rambam, Megadev Ladas Chachomim Lo Yehet Sarich Hasra. Let's understand that the Ravid has a very good objection, Lechora, at the face of it, against the Rambam. The Rambam has to be consistent. There's an inconsistency here, because we know in the case of Megadev, someone who's Mavarachas Hashem, I'm using a Lashon Saginar, he is punished. Even though we know he's not a shogeg, he's amazed. Okay, we have to see exactly how that works. So the Rav says the following: Divrei Rambam lechorat muim, kmo shehesig olav arayva demayshneidim zomim shenasim ne'noshim, they're punished b'li hasra mimagadev. In other words, the premise here of this question, and for that we'd have to see the sugi Megadev, is Megadev is not a shogeg, he's amazing. Nevertheless, he needs Asra. Without Asra, he's not punished. So the question is, if the Rambam is right, that in Eidim Zomim, since there's no din of shogeg in Eidim Zomim, therefore you don't need Asra in order to punish Eidim Zomim, then in Megadev, likewise, since there's no din of shogeg in Megadev, there should be no requirement of Asra. Says Reb Chaim, there's a fundamental difference between Megadev and Eidim Zomimim. In the case of Megadev, he's punished because of the Avera, and nobody is punished for an Avera without what? Without a Hasra. But in the case of Eidim Zomimim, he's not being punished because of his Avera. The Avera itself is not enough to be Mechayev him, according to Reb Chaim. Ela Chal Hashem Shel Eid Zomim Begavra. No, if that be the case, then the Torah could say that it doesn't matter whether or not their case, meaning their testimony, was a case of shogeg or a case of Meziv, whether it was with Asra or without Asra, the Torah decides to establish that the Eid Zomim is an Eid Zomim, even though he was a Shogeg. As he can yell and scream, I didn't realize the brunt of the law, and so forth and so on. And we never gave him Asra before him. Nevertheless, we're going to punish him because of the Chal Shem Eid Zomim. The Chal Shem Eid Zomim is established not according to the universal regulations that apply to every Avera, in which the Avera could never engender a Chiyuv Onshin without a Hasra, because otherwise there's always a possibility of Shogeg. That applies to every Avera, but not to Eid Zomim. Because Eid Zomim is a whole new ballgame, as we'd say. It's the Chal Shem Eid Zomim in Gavra, and that, there's no difference between Shogeg or Mezid with Hasra or without a Hasra. Number four, fourth Raya of Reb Chaim. Eidim Zomimim testify against the Kohen that he's a Ben Grusha and he's a Ben Chalutza, and we don't make the Eid Zomim himself into a Ben Grusha, into a Cholo, but rather we give him Malkus. And Tosus says on Daf Dalet Amud Beis that you get Malkus for the Lav of Lo Sane, which seems to be against Reb Chaim, correct? Shegzeres HaKosuv She'edim Zomimim Lokim Alav Zeh Afal pi she'ein bo maisa. Fine, that's Tosus. But let's open up the Rambam. The Rambam in Perek Chof Milchus Eidus Halacha Ches says the following: that the Eidim get Malkus only in four cases. Right, the four cases that we learned, remember, in the Mishnah at the beginning of the Masechta and the Braisa on Daf Beis Amud Beis, says the Rambam, V'arba dvarim elu mipi hakabolahim, kach kiblu chachomim, sheshnaim sheshiu, etc., etc. The Rambam, in these four cases, does not quote the pasuk, the lav of Lo San Brecha Eid Shokar, as Tosus does. The Rambam goes out of his way to formulate what he calls Kabbalah Shekiblu Chachamim. That these four cases get Malkus. Says Reb Chaim, you know what this Kabbalah is? This Kabbalah is the Chal Shem Eid Zomim in Gavra. They're not getting Malkus for violating the law. The Rambam doesn't mention the law of Losana, but rather there's a Divrei Kabbalah, there was a transmission, what we call Torah Shebal Peh, that in these four cases, and only in these four cases, will there be Malkus for Kashu Zomam as a result, not of the Averis Halav, but rather as a result of the Chal Shem Gavra. So Rabosai, what happens, according to the Rambam, if we come up with a fifth case? For example, I'll give you an example that I have in mind. Rabbi Kivega raises this question. What happens if two Eidim come into Bez and they testify that they saw the new moon, and then two Eidim come and amazen them? What do we do with the first two Eidim? The Eidim Zomim. Well, according to the Tosus, if you're chai for violating the law of Losan of Reach Eid Shokar Malkus, so what should we do with these Eidim? Clearly give them Malkus. We can't make them into a new moon, so we'll give them Malkus. And that would fit in the pattern, into the pattern of all those four cases. We can't do to the Eidim exactly what they wanted to do to the Nidah. But according to the way Reb Chaim understands the Rambam, and the Rambam is saying that four cases and only four cases, because there's a separate Kabbalah, meaning in those four cases we can establish, we can paste on, attach on to these Eidim Achal Shem Eid Zomim, and therefore they get Malkus, even though they didn't, they deserved a different kind of punishment. It's only in these four cases. We're not dealing with the Averis Halav. So even a fifth case, even though it also shares the Averis Halav, it will not be subject to this punishment of Malkus. So that's where Rabbi Kivega goes back and forth. He says, do we need a Nidon? Or is there a violation of Losan of Rache Eid Shokar? So you're right. It could be that the Rambam would hold that the Chal Shem Eid Zomim is only Chal in these four cases, because in these four cases there's a Nidon that's going to, if we accept the original Eidus, he's going to suffer, whether it's Golus, whether he's Chalolus, whether he'll get sold as an Eved Ivri, or he'll be Chayv to pay Kofar. Number five. The Gemara in Makis on Daf Dalet Amud Beis says the following. V'rabbanon hai lo sana b'reacha et shaker mai darshi be. Right? Reb Meir says that you get two sets of malchus. You get 80 malchus, right? 39 times 2. The Chachamim say you only get one set of malchus for kasha zama. So what do they do with lo sana b'reacha et shaker? And the Gemara answers, mi boile, hahu mi boile las haro li edim zomimim. We need some sort of warning in the Torah, sort of a law for Edim Zomimim. And the law for Edim Zomimim is Lo Sana. Fekra b'kiveger akasha. Mashma desalkedai the hashas still rabbanon leka malchus mishum Lo Sana. V'kashali haba ben grusha mefurish the lokin. V'itzrif bozeh Lo Sana. He says, how could the Gemara have a havamina that the pasuk Lo Sana is superfluous? It's definitely necessary because in the case of Ben Grushim and Chalutza, what's the source for Malkus? You can't say it's based on Kasha Zoma because their Eidus was not meant to give Malkus to some. They were only passing them for Kahuna. And the answer is, and the only answer that's possible is Lo Sana. Says Reb Chaim, that Kasha of Reb Kiveg is no Kasha at all. Because the Chiv Malkus is not for the Averis Halav of Lo Sana, but rather for the Chalushem Eid Zomen, Midin HaZoma, as we saw in the Rambam. And therefore, if the Malkus is coming Midin HaZoma, the Gemara has a very good question. What do we do with the Lav of Lo Sana? Meaning, since we give Malkus in the case of Ben Grushim and Chalutza for Kasher Zoma, because he's an Eid Zomen, why do I need Lo Sana B'Reach Eid Shoka? And what is the Gemara's answer? The Gemara says, well, we need Lo Sana as an Azhara for Edim Zomim. It doesn't mean that they're getting punished because of the violation of Lo Sana B'Reach Eid Shoker. But there's got to be some Averis Halav in order for the Torah to justify its conclusion that we should be Matil Aleim Shem Eid Zomim. So why do we attach the Shem Eid Zomim to these Eidim? There must have been some Avera. Again, it's not that that Avera is what engenders the punishment, but it's a precondition. So you know, you have now two sets of rules. You have the rule that there's got to be some sort of an Avera, some sort of guilt and crime. And number two, there's got to be something else, other conditions that have to be met in order to postulate a Chalos Shem Eid Zomim. And now we go on to page Kuf Pei Zayin. Tosis in Shavuos has a kasha. There's a list in the Gemara in Shavuos of three cases where you violate a lav and you get malchus even without a maisa. And Eid Zomim is not on the list. Why isn't Eid Zomim on the list of those lavim which, even though you violated them without a maisa, you get malchus? According to Reb Chaim, the kasha is not a kasha. Eid Zomim doesn't belong to this list. Because that list includes three averos for which you violated a lav and you get malchus despite the fact that you didn't do a maisa. But here in the case of Eid Zomim, you're not getting malchus because of the violation of the lav. You're getting malchus as a result of the Chal Shem Eid Zomim. And finally, the Gemara Bava Kama Daf Ayin Dalid Amud Beis has a sugya which is called Hakhosha Tchilas Hazom. I think we mentioned this in the past. And according to Rabbi Lazar, Hakhosha Lav Tchilas Hazom, which means that even though there was Hakhosha, there could still be Hazom. 80 Nefashos Sheidu Sheker. So in other words, this pair of Edim were proven to be false witnesses. Okay, that's called Hakhosha. Vinoda Shikram. And how do we know that they perjure themselves and their testimony is false? Baharud Baradlov. Right? The dead man came in on 2 feet. Is the Gemara says that according to this sheet of Lokin, they get Malkus Mishum Lo Sana. Oh, the Chachamim disagree because they say that Lo Sana is a lav Hanitak Lemisas Bezd. In other words, any lav which could, under certain circumstances, incur a capital punishment, then you don't give malchus for such a lav. That we'll learn in the Bli Neder in the third parak of Makkos. So according to Rabbi Lezer, you can get malchus for Lo Sana because it's a lav, even despite the fact it's a lav hanitan las horas misas bez. But the Rambam paskins ein edei sheker lokim kishba haruk baraglav. Why? Because hakhosha is tchilas hazama. We already established that they were 80 sheker, and therefore they violated the law of Losana. And the Rambam says that on that basis alone, we can give them malchus. And the question is obvious: how can we give them malchus for violating Losana? The Rambam holds that a law shenita lasharis misus beznin ain't lokin a law. So let's look at it inside. He says, Harei Tmiya. He says, Harei Ulav Hanita Lazarus Misbez, and I can get Malkus. And the answer is, Bet Aim, Lipsak Zebir Hagrachzal, Ladasa Ramam, Li Olam Ein Adam Zomim Lokim and Enoshim, Machmas Halav Delosan, LLP, Chalushem, Dazom de Gavra. So again, is the Lav of Losana considered a Lav Hanita Lazarus Misbez or not? Well, it depends. If you're going to say that Adam Zomim are punished, in the case of Misa, they get Misa because of the violation of the Lav. That means that that Lav has within it the potential to generate a Chiv Misa. And it's a Lav and Ethan Lazarus Misa. You can never get Malkus for Losana. But if you say that the Misa that the Edom get is not because of the violation of the Lav, but simply because of the Kal Hashem Eid Zomim, then the Lav itself is not a Lav and Ethan Lazarus Misa Spezdin, and therefore the Lav could engender Malkus. Beautiful piece of Torah from Reb Chaim. So many different pieces of the puzzle fit together. Okay, we'll stop here with that, and that'll be our excursion into Brisket Torah for tonight. And now, what we can do is we can take a look at Daf Chesed with Aleph, and we can start the Gemara. The Mishnah says on Daf Ches Amud Aleph that if someone throws a stone into a public area and he kills someone, then he goes into galus, as if to say he's a shogeg. Would you call that guy a shogeg when he throws something, you know, a potential murder weapon, he throws a bomb into Rishus HaRabin? So the Gemara right away asks, Rishus HaRabin Mezidu? He should definitely be chayev. Well, I don't know if he's Chayv Misa, but at least he's Karov Lemezin, and he should be Potul from Golus. He doesn't have a right to enjoy the protection of the Ir Mikla.
He just threw it. He didn't
So that's going to be the Gemara's answer, more or less. Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, Bisoser Es Koslo. We're not talking as we thought when we first read the Mishnah about someone who deliberately throws a stone into Nulav Shisram. He doesn't have the right to Golos if he kills somebody. But rather, we're talking about a case of someone who's chipping away at his Kosel, which he's doing in his own private domain. And lo and behold, a piece of stone flies out and goes into Rishisarabim and kills someone. The Gemara's not happy with that either. The Gemara thinks that if a person has a kosel and he's taking it apart, he's demolishing his wall in such close proximity to a public area, he's got to be more careful. This is absolute pshia. The negligence is profound, and he's karev l'mezid. So Gemara says, "Iboyle liyune." Even in this case of sosuris kosel, he's karev l'mezid. In other words, this is a very serious negligence. It's, you know, we could almost predict a priori that he's going to, if he's not super duper careful, he's, and a stone goes flying, he's going to injure someone. He cannot claim that I'm a shogeg. So the Gemara answers, Bisoser es kosel balat. But rather the case is that it's very far fetched that anyone should be damaged by this stone. He didn't have any reason to assume that somebody would find himself walking around the Rishus HaRabim at night. Maybe it was scary at night. Gemara's not happy with that answer either. But Laila Nami Boile Liyude, there are people who go at night. And it's in the Halami, the Gemara thought that since it's far fetched that somebody would be damaged because people don't frequent the Rishus HaRabim at night. The Gemara in the answer says no. There is some element of probability, call it 5%, 10%, that somebody's going through a public area at night, and he should have taken that into consideration. He's still considered Karov Le Mezid. So again, the man is chipping away at his wall, and it's nighttime. A piece of stone flies out into the public area. The Gemara says he's karov l'mezid. He doesn't have the right to protect himself by going to the mikveh. So Gemara gives the following answer. Bisoser es koso liashba. You remember we discussed this case of liashba. They used to have public outhouses. There were garbage dumps, and people would sometimes go there to relieve themselves. So the Gemara says, "Hi, ashba hechi dami." What kind of a disposal area are we talking about? Ishrichi be rabim. If people come very frequently to get rid of their garbage, for example, posheahu. Then once again, his level of negligence is very high on the Richter scale, and therefore he's karov lemezid. He doesn't have the right to be called a shogeg. Ve'iloshrichi be rabim. If there aren't people who go there because it's not a place that you want to go into, and therefore he doesn't anticipate that anyone would be there, honestly, he didn't have to take into consideration that he might kill someone, nobody goes there. So the Ritva points out that we have to be very careful about interpreting this Gemara. What the Gemara means when it says lo shchichi be'rabim, which literally translates means there are hardly any people there, it's not frequented, says the Ritva, no, don't take the Gemara literally. If there are people who go there, even infrequently, that would be enough to consider him karv l'mezid. But rather, in the language of the Ritva, ein mitzuyim shom anoshim klal. That's what the Gemara means when it says lo shchichi be'rabim. Meaning the rabbim themselves are lo shchiach be'. You know, they don't find themselves there. They're not motzui there. Okay. So the Gemara thinks that that's called anus. Why is it onus? It's so rare that someone would linger around in this ashpa. I mean, probably it's like you can't tolerate the smell there or whatever it is. It's not humanly inhabitable. Therefore, there's no negligence at all. You can throw stones into the ashpa and you don't have to worry that someone's there. It's onus. On Rav Papa, we have to find this middle ground where there are people but not too many people. Lo tzricha el li ashba asuya li panos ba balayla. People during the day they would never be found there because they need privacy when they're relieving themselves. But at night, dafka, it's funny. You know, before when we talk about Rishon Rabbi, we said at night people don't frequent these places. But now when we're talking about an ashba, if you got to go, you got to go. And now you are covered and concealed by the mantle of darkness, so you have that element of privacy. The Aina Suya Lipanas Baba Yom, nobody would go there during the day in the eyes of, in public eye. So if he killed someone at night, that would be considered Karv L'mezid, because it's used frequently enough to engender a chiyuv, an obligation that he should have been more careful. But he killed somebody by day. And even though ein asuya lipanos ba bayom, people don't go there by day. Ika de mikri v'yosef. Let's say that an emergency happened and he had to go there by day. Okay, so a person is, again, he's tearing down his wall during the day. There's an ashpa right next door. People don't use the ashpa, don't frequent it during the day. But ika de mikri v'yosef. He has to realize that once in a while somebody in an emergency situation might have to use that place. He can't call him really seriously negligent. The level of negligence is not high profile. Why? Because it's very rare that people go there during the daylight hours. But on the other hand, onus nami lohavi, you can't say that there was no negligence. He should have considered even that percentage of a possibility, there are those who use it. Now, if we go through the Rishonim, Rashi and the Rambam, we're going to get an impression that the Rishonim have a certain controversy about how to paskin halacha lemaisa based on the final conclusion of this sugya. According to Rashi, the impression is that this place called an ashpa, she'ein asuya liponos bo bayom, would be a place that even though technically it's a rishus harabim, but it's not, as far as goes, as far as a chiyuv poshea is concerned, it's not really rishus harabim, because It's an ashba, and people don't go there during the day. Therefore, Rashi concludes that if a person would throw a stone in the middle of the day into this ashba and kill someone, he's a shogeg. The Rambam says no. The Rambam says only in a case where he was breaking down his wall in his own private domain. And true, he should have been considerate and considered the possibility that somebody might be in this ashba by day, but that's not an outright pshia. And therefore he's considered a shogeg, he goes into ghost. But, says the Rambam, if he picked up a stone, a boulder, and he threw it into Rosh Hashanah by day, in this ashba place, which, although it's hardly a Rosh Hashanah from the perspective of how frequent it is during the day, nevertheless it's technically Rosh Hashanah, in such a case, he's karov lemezid and he doesn't go into ghost. So again, let's just review. There's a machlokas rishonim about the maskana of this sugya. What does the Gemara hold about the case in our Mishnah where the Mishnah of Haskins has zorik evelish shesarav v'hargareis and gold? We know it's a case of soser es kosel. We know it's a case where the stone killed someone in an ashpa, in a dumping ground. And we know it happened during the day. It's hardly likely, very unlikely, shall we say, that anyone's there, but it could be that someone's there. That's called a shogeg. What would be, according to this Gemara, the Maskanas HaSugya, in a case where he literally picked up a stone and threw it into the Rosh Hashanah Rabban in an ashpa, she'ena asuya liponispa bayom? So Rashi says, let's go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, hazorek evel Rosh Hashanah v'harag hareze golem. All the Gemara was trying to work out is what kind of scenario would make this Rosh Hashanah Rabban into a shogeg. Once we've defined the Rosh Hashanah Rabban as an ashpa she'ena asuya liponispa bayom, then we have a shogeg here. Even if he would pick up a stone and throw it and kill somebody, says the Rambam, no. Picking up a stone and throwing is karov lebiz. And the Orach HaNer, we've quoted the Orach HaNer in the past, the Orach HaNer says that according to the Rambam, there are two reasons why Zorek Evin L'Shus HaRavim is Karov L'Mezim. Reason number one is because he actively, deliberately threw the stone into Rosh Hashanah Rabban. Reason number two is because Rosh Hashanah Rabban is frequented by the Rabban. So when the Gemara gets up and objects, I don't understand the Mishnah. How can you tell me that someone who kills someone by throwing a stone in Rosh Hashanah Rabban is Chayev Golos, he's Karov L'Mezim? The Gemara is objecting on two grounds. Number one, this place is frequented, and therefore the negligence is intense. And number two, didn't he actively kill someone by picking up a stone and throwing it? What right does he have to do that? So the Gemara answers both questions by introducing, number one, soser es koslo, and number two, ashpa she'en asuya liponispo bayom. Each question is answered with a different response, but we need both of them. Number one, it's not amazing because he didn't actively, deliberately throw the stone in the Rosh Hashanah Rabban. He was just soser es koslo. Number two, it's not a Rosh Hashanah Rabban the way you understand it, that's being frequented by Rabban. It's an ashpa, she'en asuya liponos. Therefore, says the Rambam, the only case that the Mishnah could be discussing where it's shogeg and yechayev golos is a case that has both of these conditions. Namely, he's soser es koslo into, I mean, the stone falls into a pach, a ashpa, she'en asuya liponispo bayom. But if he actively, deliberately picked up a stone and threw it into a public area, even if that public area smells so bad, pardon the expression, that nobody goes there, but he kills someone, that's called karov lemezid. Because you have a different issue over here. The fact that you deliberately did an act that could endanger the life of someone else. That, says the Rambam, is karov lemezid. That's the Orach HaNer.
How does Rashi kind of not...
How would Rashi counter argue?
No.
Well, first of all, wait a minute. Rashi is motivated by the fact that the Mishnah says Zorik Evel Rosh Hashanah Rabban. So he threw a stone. And Rashi wants to suggest that if we could solve the problem of Rosh Hashanah Rabban here and show that it's it's a non-frequently frequented Rishus HaRabim, then we could go back to the simple pshat in the Mishnah of Zorek Evan.
Does the Rambam in his Pirus and Mishnayos learn the Mishnah?
You want to open up? You want to open up the Rambam? You don't find it.
It's obvious that the Rambam defines the Mishnah by through the Gemara, and limits it only through the way the Gemara understands it.
In other words, once Rav Papa made his breakthrough, and he said that the Mishnah is talking about a soser es koslo, correct? I'm sorry, not Rav Papa. Rav Papa was the one who said that it's an ashpa. Okay, so but what about the zrika? Did he in fact throw something into Rishus Rabbim? Omer Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak? No, it's soser es koslo. So the Rambam understands that once Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak establishes that zorik es evin Rishus Rabbim means he's a soser es koslo, he didn't pick up a stone, a boulder, and throw it. That remains. That's true from the beginning of the sugya to the end. It's impossible, it's intolerable to interpret the Mishnah literally that he was zorik Rishus Rabbim. What the Gemara needs Rav Papa for is to answer another problem. Okay, he was soser es koslo, but that doesn't give him any rights to endanger the life of someone in Rishus HaRabim, and for that we need the Ashpa business. Rashi holds that once we have the Ashpa business, we no longer have to rely on Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, the Ukimta of Soser S. Kosla. And therefore Rav Papa substitutes for Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak. And we do away with Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak. Einav Kinami, he threw this stone into Rishus HaRabim. Why isn't it a heavy negligence? Because he didn't anticipate anyone would be in Rishus Rabbim. And that's based on Rav Papa, the Ukimta of Ashpa She'ein Asuya Lipanis Po Bayim.
He doesn't necessarily read that way.
Speak a drop loud if you
don't. I'm not sure how it reads that way. It seems like Rav Papa builds on top of the case of Rav.
How do you get that impression? What leads you to that conclusion? That's certainly the Rambam's conclusion.
Because it never goes back and says, okay, we're starting over. It just continues asking questions and answers.
Well, but look at Rav Papa's language. He says, Lotzricha Ella. Do you see those three words?
Yeah.
So it could be Lotzricha Ella means forget about Soser as Kosla. And that's indeed the way Rashi's going to learn it. Lotzricha Ella means leave out Soser as Kosla. That's totally unnecessary. Look at Tosas Divar Masa Lo Tzricha Ella. That's going on Rav Papa. Pirush Demi Hashda Lo Tzarech Lo Ukma B'Soser Dehuadin B'Zorek Mamish. So what I said in Rashi is really Tosas. Rashi, you're not 100% sure. So again, the Machlokes in the Rambam and Tosas is whether or not Rav Papa's statement replaces Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, makes Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak so kimta completely superfluous and unnecessary. Okay. Now we get back to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. You remember that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says that if the stone was in flight and then the victim puts his head out and he catches the stone on his head, you know, in his head, then in such a case you're potter from goals. So Gemara says, Tara Rabbanu, we learned in the Braisa. And this is the case that we've been discussing all along. Remember the pasuk says, "V'nashal ha-barzel mina'etz u'matza esrei ehu v'mes." What does the word umatza mean? The Gemara says that umatza means that this weapon, so to speak, right, the eitz or the barzel of the eitz, that was Machlokas Revi and Chachamim, but whatever it is, that's umatza. Umatza means they found the guy was there. You know, it's like if you have a target and you throw something at the target, you could say that the weapon found the target, right? The bullet found the target or the arrow found its target. So it means that his head was already out there. Prat, this excludes, lemamtzias atzmo, to a person who pops his head out. It's interesting, the language of Elazar ben Yaakov in Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov and Amishnas, Hotzi Hala Es Rosha. The Brice has an even more dramatic language, and that is Mamtzias Atzmo, you know, like he presents himself, you know, to almost to catch this this object in his head, this Evan in his head. Mikado Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Mishi Yotza Evan Miyado Hotzi Allah Srosho Bikil Patu. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, Lemaim, are you telling me that the word matzah may kara mashma? I mean, let's take let's investigate all the occasions in the Torah where the word umatzah appears. Are you telling me that the word umatzah means that the situation was already set up beforehand? Is that what the word umatzah means? Shekvar hayamatzu mikodim lechem. Right, that the guy's head was there. When it says umatzas reyehu, it means he was there already beforehand. Urimini, I'm going to ask you a question. And here the Gemara is going to the parsha of Steachuza in Bahar at the end of Sefer Vayikra. And the pasuk there says in Vayikra Chafei, V'ish ki lo yelo goel v'hisiga yado umatzah kidei geulos. So a man sells a field. And this field was called a Steachuza, which means he inherited as a Yerusha from his father, and it goes back generations. And the Torah says, with regard to a Steachuza, you have a right to be goel. That means the seller has a right to redeem the field, pay the price to back to the buyer, and force the buyer to return the field, the Steachuza, to him. So in other words, the seller is now is become the buyer, correct? So the Torah says, umatzah kidei gulasa. Umatzah kidei gulasa means he has the money to pay. And the money, the sum that he has to pay for this gula is prorated. In other words, depending upon how many years he owned it, you know, so we subtract, you know, the two figures, one from the other. Let's say, for example, if he paid 100, which means 10 per year for a 10-year soul. So if, let's say, he buys it back after 3 years, so we subtract, you know, the 30 from the 100. But anyway, that's the prorating. So now it says umatzah, and the Gemara Darshins, the Brisa Darshins, prat l'matzah. In other words, a person doesn't have rights to redeem his field if it was matzah. Okay, so instead of the negative, let's talk about the positive. Okay? Under what conditions do we establish, does the Torah establish, that the seller has rights to now force the buyer's hand to sell it back to him? It's only if the seller, at the time that he sold the Steachuza, did not have funds. And since he didn't have funds, the Torah says he was forced to sell his field. Let's give him a break. Let's give him a schus geula, rights to be goel the field. But umatzah is prat lematzah. Let's say, or even at the time, already at the time that he sold the field, he had money, and therefore he made a financial decision. You know, he thought it would be lucrative to sell it and then buy it back. So this excludes the case of Shalom Yimkar Berachok V'Yigol Bekarov Berav V'Yigol B'Yofa. So what happens over here? A man sells his achuza and he doesn't have money to redeem it. And he wants to redeem it a lot. So what does he do? He sells another field, which he owns, which is far away, and he uses the money to redeem this field, which is closer. So in such a case, the Torah is not going to grant him rights to be goel. Why? Because the Torah says, umatzah, meaning he finds the funds come into his possession, prat lematzui, to the exclusion of someone who had the funds from the get-go. So it's very interesting. You know, let's say I want to get a field that's closer, you know, because then I save a lot of money on sending out my employees and so forth and so on. So what am I going to do? I'm going to sell a field that I own that's farther away, and then I'm going to use that money to be goel my field. But the truth is that I owned the further field from the beginning. So I had the opportunity to liquidate my assets and have money in the bank. In such a case, he's called a matzah. In any event, do you see now the contradiction? Because until now, what we've been saying, as far as Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is concerned, that when the Torah says "umatzes reyehu," it means that his head was already out there. Umatzah means it found something that was already there. Here we're saying umatzah comes to exclude the case of money that he already had in his possession when he sold the Steyachuzah. So it's a contradiction. So the Gemara answers that there's no contradiction. Amar Rava, Hacha Min Yana Dekrava, Hasam Min Yana Dekra. In other words, whenever we see the word umatzah, we should interpret it in its context. Hasam Min Yana Dekra, there in its context, with regard to selling and redeeming a Steyachuzah. The Torah says, I'll read the pasuk to you, it says, V'siga yado umatzah. In other words, he was able to get funds. Umatzah dumya d'v'sigu yado. Mahi siga yado. Mehashta. The phrase v'siga yado means, all of a sudden I came into money. I obtained some possession, some money. Mehashta now. Is af matzah nami mehashta. So to the word matzah means that now I got money. Right? So let's say at the time I sold you the field, they had no money. Now I won the lottery and I got money. Then I could take that money and I could use it to be goyel. Because it's hisiga yado umatzah. Hisiga yado umatzah means all of a sudden he got money subsequent to the sale and he has the money to purchase it. Ha-ha, but here in the parasha of Rotzeach v'shogeg, min yana dekra, let's look at the context of the Torah. The Torah says, v'asher yavo esrayehu bayar umatzah. So the Reish of the Pasuk is talking about someone who is yavo esrayehu bayar. So umatzah dumya diyar, we should equate the word umatzah at the end of this Pasuk with the word yar at the beginning of the Pasuk. Ma yar midi di isamei kara. The yar was always there. It didn't come into being subsequently. Afu matzanami, midi the isa mikara was always there, meaning the nerag was there from the beginning. And you killed him, your chayv goes. But if he was hotzi or mamtzius atzmo, he's mamtzius rosho, after the murder weapon was in flight, in that case, you're not chayv goes. Okay, Rabbosai, we'll stop here.
Your opinion.